Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. Welcome to Vegan Nation. I am very excited that joining us via Skype in New Zealand is my guest, Carl Scott. Carl is an ex-slaughterhouse worker, and he is now a very powerful, effective vegan activist. Thank you, Carl, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
You're welcome. Thank you.
I'd like to hear about your journey to veganism.
How does somebody who was a slaughterhouse worker end up a vegan activist? I was involved with animal exploitation from a very, very young age. In fact, I've often reflected my earliest childhood memory is of a dying animal because my father was a hunter. He also worked in a slaughterhouse and he shore sheep and trapped. We have introduced animals in New Zealand that were brought here from Australia, possums and wallabies, and we also had rabbits and things. So he was involved in controlling those animals, which had become considered a pest in our country. So right from day one, I was surrounded by dead and dying animals all the time. And I just thought all of this was normal. I didn't know any different. I never enjoyed seeing all the dead animals, but I just accepted it. And Dad would take us hunting. I have three brothers, and he would take us out on hunting trips with him. I remember he shot a deer once, and I saw it dying. It didn't die straight away. And, you know, this thing hunters often tell you, they have a good life and a quick death. Well, sometimes they have a quick death, but no, sometimes they don't. Sometimes it just takes days for them to die and in agony the whole time. So I saw this deer dying, and that really affected me, I think, just the look on its eyes. I didn't enjoy that. Two of my other brothers enjoyed hunting. They followed Dad's footsteps, but I never did. However, I was about 12, I think. One of my friends at school wanted to trap the possums for their fur. There was some money to be made for a couple of young fellas. So I did that, and I thought, oh, well, my dad will be pleased with me. He's a hunter, and he'll be pleased if his son's doing that sort of thing. You know, a young fellow wants his dad to be proud of him. So I thought, all right, I'll do this, and the money will be good anyway. I remember the first one because I didn't want to do it, and I didn't like it, but I made myself do it because, as I say, I grew up thinking that this is what you do. This is normal. One of the last ones, I won't go into detail, but it didn't die quickly, and it was a really hideous death. And I thought, I don't want to do this anymore. So not long after that, I quit doing that. I also worked on a battery farm when I was a kid. Funny, I never saw inside the sheds, and I don't think that was an accident. My good friend, Nigel, his parents owned the farm, and we just cleaned the eggs and things and packed them into trays. But yeah, thinking about it later, I thought, they never showed me inside the sheds, and I don't think there was an accident. I think they deliberately didn't let me see them. But yeah, we went fishing. We thought that was all normal and great fun, and all these things growing up as a kid that was normal. Well, I do remember going to the rodeo, AMP shows they called them, Agricultural and Pastoral Society, farming community shows. We would go along to those. But I remember perhaps in my early teens or mid-teens going along to the rodeo and thinking, you know, this is actually pretty messed up. These animals are not happy. I just sort of stopped going. I thought I didn't like it anymore. So I guess I had some sort of awakening somewhere along the way. The early 1990s, when I was living in Waimate, and unemployment in New Zealand was very high. It was very hard to get a job if you were unskilled and unqualified. My father worked at the slaughterhouse near Waimate. I wouldn't have been able to get a job there, except he knew the personnel officer who was doing the recruiting, and he put in a good word for me. Look, my son needs a job. Can you help out Charlie? And Charlie said, look, we'll see what we can do, Dave. And I ended up with a job there. Certainly was not my dream job, working at a slaughterhouse, but it was the only thing going. It was the only game in town for a young, unqualified man. In New Zealand, we call them freezing works because a lot of the meat that comes out of those slaughterhouses is exported, frozen, and exported around the world. So I became a freezing worker. That's what they were known as. I did that for 4 years, and I guess the first day or two working there, it was pretty gross. But it's funny how you learn to just sort of switch off, and something I've sort of reflected on in past years. People have asked me, oh, how did it feel working there? Oh my God, you know, seeing all this horror and brutality. But growing up in a rural community where I was used to that anyway, and seeing all these dead animals, it didn't affect me that much. It's surprising how much you can sort of learn to just switch off and not think about it. And I just viewed the animals as objects. I was a meat eater at that time in my life. I still incorrectly believed that humans need to eat meat to be healthy. I'd heard about vegetarians, so I knew that there were people out there who didn't eat meat, but I had this impression that it was very strange and maybe risky. So I thought, oh well, you know, Carl, you eat meat, man. This is where it comes from. Why should you be exempt? You know, why should someone else do the dirty work? If you eat meat, you should own this. And so I did. I owned it and was quite proud that I was a tough guy. I could handle the grossness and the horror and not be affected by it. But even so, there were moments that pricked my conscience, and I saw things happen at that place that that did bother me, and realised, okay, they're not objects, they're animals, they're beings. But I didn't reflect about it for long. You can't when you work in a place like that. You can't think about it too deeply, or you sort of go mad. In fact, a friend of mine, in a sort of ironic twist of fate, he works in the vivisection industry, and we were having a conversation one time, and he said to me, "You can't care when you work in this industry. You just can't." So unfortunately, humans are really good at living in denial. We're very good at it. We rationalize and justify, and you see it all the time. So that's what happened, and I saw the animals dying at the slaughterhouse. There was sheep and cattle at the place where I work. It was quite a big factory. And yeah, I watched the sheep die. And in New Zealand, it's quite unusual compared to the States and other parts of the world. Our pigs and chickens are all farmed indoors in factory farms. That's pretty normal. But our cows and sheep are all farmed, or mostly farmed, outdoors on grass-fed pasture. And that's not the organics industry or anything. That's just standard practice in New Zealand. The dairy industry in New Zealand's becoming more indoor and intensive. So the argument was always, you know, the animals have a good life and they die a quick, painless death. And I found that to not be true. Well, first of all, we know their life is not exactly paradise. It's probably better than the animals in factory farms, that's for sure, but it's not paradise. Things like tail docking and dehorning and castration and things. Also, yeah, I watched them die, and I won't describe it in gory detail, but the sheep, they regained consciousness just before they had their throats cut, or as they were having their throats cut. So it wasn't a nice death for them. I saw the cows being killed too. It was slow and horrible. So I saw a few things that bothered me there, but just learned to get on with it. That's kind of what led me to working in a slaughterhouse and what it was like.
Thank you for sharing all that. And I think it is important for the public to hear the details, because in the United States, all the details are hidden. All operations in slaughterhouses, small and large, are hidden from the American public. You know, it's important that we be educated and know what these animals are experiencing.
I think it's becoming the same in New Zealand. We used to be very proud of what we did, and they used to give guided tours of slaughterhouses in New Zealand. And animal rights activists could go in and take a camera, and did, and filmed it. But then now they're very careful who they let go through, because they realise that not everybody accepts it unquestioningly and unthinkingly. So, and the same with the factory farms. I belong to an animal rights group. We go into the farms and get footage and film, because they don't want people to know, and it's the only way people can see the truth.
How did you become a vegan activist from being a slaughterhouse worker?
Yeah, that's the second part of the story, I guess, is so how did I change from what I had grown up as and accepted as normal to something different? I've tried to think about this. Why did that happen? I guess I grew up with some good basic moral values as a child, but just didn't connect the dots between humans and animals. I did the Boy Scout movement, Cubs and Scouts in New Zealand, and you learn some good values in that movement. And my parents taught me some good basic moral values. We were always good to our cats and dogs, so just that disconnect between the other animals. I went to a church when I was a child and early teens. I attended Sunday school every week, and I guess I learned some good values there. So there was some sort of stuff in the background about caring for others and having a sense of compassion and decency. There's an animal rights organisation in New Zealand called SAFE, and Save Animals from Exploitation. I'm guessing I probably saw SAFE posters and pamphlets and things around town. Perhaps I saw some television advertisements or something, and became aware of factory farming. So I became eventually, perhaps in my 30s, quite committed to the idea of buying free range and avoiding factory farmed products. And the reason I mention SAFE is because I think it's important to realise people don't just come to these realisations. Like, I didn't suddenly decide in a cultural vacuum that I didn't like factory farming and I'm going to only buy free range. I think that emphasises the importance of being an advocate or an activist and getting that word out there, because SAFE got through to me. Now, I'm more interested these days, rather than the free range message, in promoting the vegan message, of course. But the same principle applies. If we're not delivering the message, then how can people hear it? I guess the other thing that happened is, excuse me a second, it's winter down here in New Zealand. So I'm sitting beside my fire and I'm just chucking bits of wood on the fire. It's quite cold here. We've had flooding and we've had an earthquake in the last week. The other thing that happened, I guess, that shifted my thoughts and feelings about animals was I got a wee dog called Jed. and he originally lived with my friend Karen. Karen's my ex, and he ended up living with me for the rest of his life. So we celebrated his 10th birthday. We had a big party out at Waitati, and we invited all the humans and the dogs to come and join the party. This is before I was vegan. Over that time, even while he was still with Karen, I began to appreciate how intelligent he was and what a wide range of emotions he experienced, and that he had important and meaningful social relationships with his human family, and he enjoyed the company of other dogs. And I began realizing, I think the phrase has been used, the subject of a life. He had a life that mattered to him as much as my life mattered to me. And for most of my life, I'd been trained, I guess, by the society that I live in, to think of animals as objects and things. And I couldn't quite think of him that way anymore. And it didn't take a rocket scientist to realize, well, so presumably all other animals, they have their lives too. But for me, a real light bulb moment happened one evening. I was at Karen's place, and Jed was on the couch beside me, and he was asleep, and I realized he was dreaming, and his eyes were moving around under his eyelids, and that's REM sleep, of course, and legs were twitching, and he was making wee barking noises. I thought, wow, he's having a dream. There's just no mistaking it. The only explanation for what I'm seeing, he's dreaming. And of course, you know, scientists have now realized that lots and lots of animals dream, so sure enough, he was dreaming. To me, that gave a whole new depth to my appreciation for someone of another species, and it made me think, wow, so presumably pigs dream, and probably chickens dream, and wow, you know. And so that really got me thinking, I guess. I guess all that stuff primed me for turning vegan. And it's funny, I met this vegan guy, he's a friend of mine now, Rory, and I remember discussing with him why he was vegan, and I was telling him all the reasons why I thought veganism was a very silly idea, and all the usual excuses that I now laugh at. But at the time, I actually took them seriously and believed that I was on the right track. You know, but lions eat zebras, and you know, humans have always hunted. It's just the food chain. It's what's the big deal? And life lives on life, and so all those things. And you know, sure, I believe in welfare. The animal should have a good life and die a quick death, but I don't think there's any need for this veganism stuff. So I remember having this discussion with Rory, and it was not long after that I was at a crossroads in my life, and I was seeking spiritual guidance. I'm not really a spiritual person usually, and I certainly don't belong to any religion or spiritual group or anything like that, but I just sent out a prayer of sorts to the universe saying, if there's anyone up there, out there, in here, wherever there even is, if there's anyone or anything who can sort of give me some guidance, I'd really like some at the moment, and show me what I should be doing with my life. I'd actually just broken up with Karen about that point, and sort of this real, okay, what do I do with my life now, was the key thing in my mind at that stage.
It's time to take a break. We've been listening to Carl Scott via Skype in New Zealand. Carl is a slaughterhouse worker turned vegan activist. After the break, he'll be sharing more of his story of his transformation to veganism and details of his activism in New Zealand.
You are listening to America's music station,
WCUW.
Navarone Reggae Sound System with DJ Bob Bob Boom every Friday 9 to 11 p.m. on WCUW 91.3 FM in Worcester. Old reggae, new reggae, all styles, all across the world. Navarone Reggae. You never know what you're gonna hear. The selections are crazy. Navarone Reggae Sound System, WCUW.
Welcome back to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene Narrow. We're joined by Carl Scott via Skype in New Zealand. Carl is a slaughterhouse worker turned vegan activist, and he's sharing his insights and experiences with vegan activism.
So I sent out this sort of a prayer, and for various reasons, I believed I would get an answer. So after I sent that prayer out to the universe, this is the weirdest story, by the way. If you can come up with a weirder story of how someone became vegan, I'll be very, very, very impressed. I sent out this prayer, I was expecting an answer, and suddenly the word vegan started popping up on my radar, so to speak. I guess the one of the final steps that happened, the spiritual guy, guru sort of a guy, came to Waitati where I was living, and he was going to have give a talk in the public hall. I had this idea that, you know, I've prayed for some guidance, and there's a saying that came to mind: when the pupil is ready, the teacher will come. I thought, this could be it. This could be what I'm looking for. So I went along to this talk. Turned out the guy was a Hare Krishna man. And during the talk, he looked me in the eye. There was only two of us turned up who weren't Krishna devotees. Very small meeting. But he looked me in the eye and he said, "I challenge you tonight to renounce eating meat."
Wow.
And I really, and I really think he was expecting me to say yes, but I didn't. I looked him back in the eye and said, "Look, I really don't think I'm at the point in my life where I'm comfortable with doing that, so no, I'm not going to." And he looked really surprised, like he fully expected me to say yes, but he moved on to the next person and started talking to them. But after the meeting, as the Hare Krishnas often do, there was some really nice food available, and I stayed and chatted. And one of the Krishna devotees, Guy Harvey, had met once or twice before, and I've met a few times since. He was vegan. Most of the Hare Krishnas are vegetarian, I think, but he was vegan. And we chatted a bit. And actually, he was also friends with Rory, this chap I mentioned before, so we had reason to chat. But anyway, I went home after the meeting. Perhaps Harvey made an impression on me, perhaps. I don't know. He was a very tranquil, mellow sort of a guy, Harvey. But it's also been said, you know, that the Hare Krishna food, they call it prasadam, it's blessed. So I've had people say to me, maybe the food was blessed, maybe that's what made you go vegan. So that kind of, I kind of smile to myself when they say that. Who knows? But I think it was that night, or maybe the next night, I had a dream. And this is where it gets, you know, this is weird, quite weird. I was chatting to, I'm not sure it was the Buddha or Jesus, some holy figure. There were other people around us in the dream. I don't remember the details, and we had a big long conversation, and I don't remember what that was about. But right at the end, I turned and looked at this holy figure, and I said, "I'm going to be vegan." And this feeling came over me in the dream. This just feels so right. And I woke up, whoa!
Yeah.
And I just had this knowing that that's the answer I've been seeking, and to the prayer. And I thought, No, like, that can't be my answer. I thought my answer would be write a book or go traveling or something like that, and not go vegan. That's absurd. Vegans are weird, and veganism's a stupid idea, and I can't be vegan. You know, I come from this hunting background and hunting and freezing works and stuff. I can't be vegan.
How long ago was this?
I just celebrated my fifth vegan anniversary a couple of weeks ago. So about just over 5 years ago. But I just knew that was my answer. But I resisted it. And I thought, no, well, yeah, Carl, you prayed for an answer, man. You should probably do something about this. And so I thought, well, I'll give vegetarian a go and see what happens. And so I publicly announced on Facebook, I'm vegetarian. And everyone thought I was nuts. And all my friends and family who weren't vegetarian or vegan thought I was crazy. But about 5 or 6 days went past, and it just didn't feel right. And I realized that the dream didn't say vegetarian, it said vegan. And I thought to myself, look, man, if you go praying to the universe for answers and then you get one, you need to sort of follow through on this, or at least give it a go. I said, right, I decided I'm going to have a go. I'm going to be vegan and see what happens. And just almost the instant I made that decision, the same feeling I'd had in the dream came over me, and this just feels so right. And it's been onwards and upwards ever since then, but that's what happened. But since then, I've sort of filled in the blanks. I've realized why it is so important to be vegan and how powerful and effective it is. And we can't eliminate all harm to all animals. That's not possible, but we can reduce it significantly. And that's what veganism is about. And then also learning all the benefits about the environment, and that if you do it right, and you have to add that caveat because there is such thing as junk food vegans. And if you're a junk food vegan, it's great for animals, it's great for the planet, but it's not good for you. But if you do it right, being vegan can be even good for your health. So realizing all that, and I guess for me the big thing is the animals. Having known Jed so intimately and closely, and realizing that all animals are subject of a life, and their life matters as much as mine does, or at least theirs does to them as mine does to me. So yeah, so that's how I became vegan, and then that all led into the activism. Yeah.
There's many people who are vegan but aren't vegan activists. In what propelled you into activism?
I guess after I became vegan, I started finding out as much as I could about what that really meant. Kind of obvious, you know, about the food, but what else does it mean? And I started exploring it, you know, really asking myself some questions about the philosophy behind it and the ethics. I did a lot of stuff looking on the internet.
Did you see the movie Bold Native?
Yeah, it's a great movie. So I started working with a group called New Zealand Open Rescue, and that was at that stage, they were about the only group that were going into the farms and filming and photographing and rescuing animals. And some of the work I did with them, we got on mainstream television and newspapers. We visited a couple of farms that were particularly bad, and our footage went on the TV. And I did some work with Farm Watch for about a year, and then they invited me to join, to become a member of Farm Watch, and I've been working with Farm Watch ever since, and we're still doing the same thing. We've got footage of factory farms. Pigs has been a big thing in New Zealand, pig farms. We got some pretty awful footage of pig farms, and that's been in the media. And we help other groups, because we're one of the best groups in New Zealand, well, the only group in New Zealand at the moment who's got the expertise that's needed to get that footage and know what to do with it once you've got it and that sort of thing. So we've also done work with getting footage of greyhounds and rodeo abuse and things. I also volunteer for SAFE. I do some work for them occasionally. I also formed my own group here in Dunedin, Dunedin Animal Rights Collective. We've hosted a film screening and a public talk. This year, there's a real push in New Zealand to build up the activist movement. We've all come to realise, gosh, we need more activists. There's not enough of us. So we did a Skillshare weekend up in Auckland and then in Christchurch, and we've got one happening in Dunedin soon. So just those of us who are a bit more experienced, training up new people, teaching them the skills and knowledge they need to be effective activists.
Thank you, Carl, for your courage and sharing your skills for activism. It's so clear. Veganism is so simple. It's the golden rule. That's it.
Exactly.
And so it needs activists and courageous people like you to help the animals. I think it is so peculiar, especially in 2015, because veganism is now a popular understood word, when so many people who claim to be victims, especially us women worldwide, complain constantly about all the oppression and exploitation and violence that we are experiencing. Yet then when we are carnists, we are victimizers over others. We are causing pain and suffering to others, and yet so many people don't want to look at that. It's addiction. I think it's addiction, in addition to indoctrination. And so I'm hoping that through education, more and more people will awaken and see, if we don't want to be victimized, if we don't want to be exploited, if we don't want to be oppressed, then we need to stop those action towards others, which of course are the non-human animals. Because it boomerangs back. What goes around comes around. It's the only solution.
Right.
It's necessary.
That's right. Yeah, Leo Tolstoy said it quite well. When there's this coldness in our heart, it's going to come out in all parts of our life. He said, as long as there are slaughterhouses, there will be battlefields.
Yes.
When we can't extend compassion to others. And people sometimes say, why do you spend so much time worrying about animals when there's all these human problems? And my answer to that is sort of like, God, it's absurdly easy to be vegan, and these animals can't fight back. They're at our mercy. We have a choice to show them kindness and compassion or to be cruel to them. And an alternative exists. It's been tried and tested and proven to be safe and effective. It's not like this is some scary thing. There's millions of people already doing it. You know, if we can't find it in our hearts to do the simple thing, how are we ever going to get it together to do the more complex things?
And helping the animals is helping people. That comment, of course, is very common to vegans. Oh, you care about animals, not people. And we care about human animals and other than human animals, and the abuse to the animals is the root cause of all the human problems. And that's why we still have all the violence and wars, because as a society, a global society, we are not addressing the root cause, which is carnism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so we really, really appreciate you. And I think it's especially important because of sharing your personal journey as being a hunter and being a slaughterhouse worker. And I think that's great because it helps other people, and especially men, be able to relate.
I think that's important. I think certainly in a farming country or a country with a farming history, there's this real male archetype, the farmer, the hunter, and a lot of men identify with that as part of their masculine identity, and they feel a bit threatened by the thought that of not doing that, not eating meat, not being involved with those industries and activities. But one thing I often say, a real man uses their strength and their courage, whether that's internal or external strength, to to protect the weak and the vulnerable, just to stand up for the underdog, not to exploit or victimize him, because that's the way of the bully, that's not the way of the hero. A real man will use their strength, inner or outer, to protect the weak and vulnerable. And of course that applies, it's not just for men, that's for women as well. You use your strength and courage to protect those who are weak and vulnerable. I've managed to sum up vegan philosophy in one sentence: because we don't need to hurt animals, there's no good excuse to do so.
Bravo. Thank you, Carl. We're coming to the close of the interview. Is there any other words that you'd like to share with our listeners?
One thing I always say, and I've written articles and things too, is, you know, if you care about animals and the planet and people, the first step is be the change. Like Gandhi said, be the change and go vegan. But the second stage is to get active, encourage others to go vegan. And you don't have to do that straight away. I think you need to become at least reasonably comfortable in your veganism before you can become an effective advocate. But then, you know, don't wait 5 years before you start doing advocacy, but you know, spend a wee bit of time getting settled in, get comfortable with what it means to be vegan. But we need, the animals need more activists, the planet. We need more activists out there spreading the message. Like when I was getting those messages from SAFE, if nobody's delivering the messages, we often criticize people because they're not changing, they're not going vegan, but they can't unless somebody's telling them about it. And I think we need to realize that we live in a world where we're getting conflicting messages all the time. We're getting 1,000 messages every week that says it's good to hurt animals, there's no problem, don't worry about it. And one or two messages, if we're lucky, that's saying, now hang on, this is not right and here's a better way. The only way that balance is going to change if more of us start delivering more messages. There's tons of different ways we can do that. It doesn't have to be locking yourself onto something or climbing a tower and getting arrested. We can do it in our schools, in our workplaces, in our homes, just telling people what we know, not in a critical, judgmental way. I think that just alienates people. We've got to remember all of us, or most of us, were meat eaters at once in our life, and we were not bad people, we were just ignorant. And I think that's the same with slaughterhouse workers and farmers, and that they're not bad people, they're just, they don't understand, or they only partially understand, or they've got conflicting ideas. One voice is telling them this and another voice is telling them that, and they conflict. We've got to realize that the key is delivering messages about, here's the problem, but hey, this is awesome. We've got a ready-made solution, tried and tested. It's been around for over 70 years in its current form, and there's a history that goes back beyond that. And yes, you can be safe. You're not going to die if you stop eating meat. And all these different things. There's a lot of myths that people still believe. And the idea, oh, they're just dumb animals, they don't know any different. That myth has to be busted. So we need to deliver those messages. The first step is go vegan. The second step is get active. I'd say you can just start off by just telling friends, family, workmates, colleagues about it in a quiet, non-judgmental way. If you want to step it up from there, get involved with one of the groups, one of the organizations. One thing everyone can do, and I want to see more of it, is vegan advocacy. And I know Professor Gary Francione and his abolitionist approach are pushing that. I love that message. We need to be talking about veganism a lot.
Yes.
And getting that word out there a lot. Yes. And I totally agree with him on that.
Thank you, Carl. Yes, I believe it's part of our evolution. This is the time for it.
Thanks very much, Molly.
I'd like to thank Carl Scott of New Zealand for joining us, and I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in to Vegan Nation. Join us next week at this time, where we'll bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.